Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. Cofield and Company. Ari is in for Damon. Adam Hill is here as the company. I am so fired up for today's show. I thought this last weekend was unbelievable for sports topics, and we're going to be headed down towards the to the Final Four. They do a Radio Row every year, so we've been down there a lot, many times over the last like 15 years. There are so many good talking points, and now we almost never talk women's basketball at the Final Four for the men. Women's basketball will be a topic with these coaches and these college basketball guests. So let's get to what happened with college basketball here in about 5 minutes.
Can I say real quick, though, that I was talking to somebody the other day. This is how it's cool that it's gone this far, but, like, slow down a little. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to the Final Four. I'm heading down on Wednesday. And they were like, oh, me too. That's awesome. Like, what should we do in Cleveland? And I was like, what? The Final Four is in Phoenix. Yeah. I understand there's also a women's Final Four in Cleveland. The Final Four is in Phoenix, but that is the level it has gotten to now of, like, people look at that as the Final Four, which is kind of wild to me.
That's good. That's progress. And I think that's only certain people.
Sure.
I had done the Silver State Sports and Entertainment Network debate show that they do.
Embrace Debate?
And hosted by Mike Davis. And, there was kind of the notion thrown out there that the women's Final Four is more popular than the men's.
No, it's not.
It's catching up, and it's doing well, and it is a very hot topic. And from an individual standpoint, the players, there are names that do outpace a lot of the men's names, but there's also reality. So, I'm going to get to this also later in the show about the sportsbook handle, because I saw a lot of differing opinions on what happened with the sportsbooks yesterday. But before we get to all that, because believe me, I thought about yesterday. I'm like, I could do 2 hours on the women's Final Four alone. There's so many good topics and so many things from a coverage standpoint to get into. But we think we're getting a Major League Baseball team eventually. I say that because something came out over the weekend that I thought was really weird. So we're jacked up for baseball, and we're watching the A's even more closely now. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Did you see the latest picture of food porn from Major League Baseball at the stadiums? Because you guys crapped all over me, you and Arash,
yeah,
who is our Mr. Vegas, Mr. L.A. Arash was out at a Dodgers game last week, I think the Dodgers opener, and was tracking, you know, a lot of the new Japanese flair influence at Dodger Stadium now. Multiple food stands, a whole new menu for the Japanese fans and American fans. I would try the sushi, but I've been dumped on now for 4 days. I sent you guys a picture of the big box of sushi that is $33. I've argued it's Dodger Stadium. They're catering to the Japanese. The sushi is going to be pretty good. And both of you, without even tasting Dodger Stadium sushi, have dumped on me.
I would try it. But I'm not expecting it to be anything good, and I would hope you wouldn't be either. I will say that you sent that photo last night.
I sent a photo, and it was rolls and then individual pieces of fish. The individual pieces of fish looked delectable.
They didn't. And I was with some, I would say on the scale of my friends, some of the more high-scale friends.
You have a lot of high-scale friends, too.
And I was with them, and I said a phrase that has gotten a little bit controversial locally here with somebody last night, but I said smash or pass on the sushi at Dodger Stadium, and all pass.
Snobs.
I think that's fair.
And you're a man of the streets.
I am.
So I don't know when you became this highfalutin, real picky sushi guy.
Honestly, only sushi. Because it could go either way. Like, if it's, I will eat bad food almost anywhere if it's like regular food. Mm-hmm. Sushi is one that you don't mess with.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't take sushi home and then leave in the car for a day.
No, but you'll eat it packaged, like pre-packaged.
I've never had it pre-packaged, but I believe, and Arash did not give us good information, like all the deets we needed. We couldn't hear him on Friday either because it was very loud down at TI in his phone.
Sure.
So I think there are chefs in the back making it. But your claim was good sushi chefs can't make sushi quickly. That means it's not going to be good.
Let's say if they were like, hey, we're limited to like 100 people can order it a day.
You did see the size of the box, though, right?
Yeah.
It was only like, it was basically a maybe a roll and a quarter.
Yeah.
And then a lot of like pieces of fish. It wasn't, you're not, it's ballpark prices. For $33, you're not getting like six rolls of sushi. It's not going to happen.
No. But I also, no, I'd rather have,
delicious.
I'd rather have less because that means it's probably better quality. But I just, I can't see it being good.
As I said.
Like I said, if I, I'll try to make a trip to L.A. I have a couple Padres games. I have a Diamondbacks game later this summer. I'll try to add a Dodgers game in at some point and give it a try. Although the lines look kind of crazy.
Where?
I saw the picture of the sushi line at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, it was? It was crazy?
Yeah, from like opening day. Hopefully it's not like that later in the year.
The fans know their food. They know good food. This just in
getting the sake
from drink a lot of sake. Yeah. That'll get you past maybe less than stellar sushi.
Absolutely.
This in from Pittsburgh. New food item at the ballpark called the Renegade. It is a foot-long hot dog topped with potato pierogies. I'm all over it. Pot roast, pickles, and onions. Who thinks they could eat the entire thing? If you saw the picture, this is a full game meal or a two-person meal. I think it looks great.
Well,
pierogies, a hot dog, and some pot roast and onions. Come on now.
I can also tell you this.
Pickles?
I went to a Pirates game last season.
Yeah.
Food was fantastic.
Was it?
Everywhere.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And probably no lunch.
They had a Primanti Brothers, for sure.
Oh, they had
okay. Which so they had. But they had, yeah,
so
they had
the fries and a little slaw on the sandwich.
It's also an awesome stadium for those that have been. It's incredible. But yeah, I'm not surprised they're adding quality food items. What's the park that, and I think we talked about it like 2 weeks ago, that they added like the s'mores milkshake?
Might have been
Chicago, yeah.
And I saw yesterday White Sox tickets get in price was $5.
They should just charge you whatever the cost of that milkshake is. You just pay for the milkshake and you get in.
Well, you saw the new gimmick, and this happens at a lot of stadiums, but the smartest gimmick at stadiums that don't sell a lot of tickets, especially midweek, is to offer good tickets and all you can eat. I think the Marlins have a $52 a seat all you can eat.
Wow, that's pretty good.
I mean, if you get decent tickets, at least lower level tickets, and then you get to gorge.
When I checked this morning, that was the get-in price for the Diamondbacks game tomorrow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when are you leaving?
With no all you can eat.
I didn't even ask you that.
Tomorrow.
Okay. Like midday? Morning?
I'll be there in the morning.
And you're going to the game? You're trying to go to the game?
I was thinking about it.
Oh, wow.
But it's...
I think I'm just going to call in. I'll miss tomorrow's show.
Might as well.
Might as well.
It's your Yankees.
That, you know what? Now that I think about it, that, $52 is a pretty good get-in price.
Because
I think the SO tried to treat me like late birthday present. She'll do that. She's nice. But bought me tickets to a Padres-Yankees game. So you're talking down the stretch of Jeter's last season. I think Jeter didn't play.
I think
it was like
that.
Upper level tickets for like 105
yeah.
each.
Yeah.
So oops.
Sounds right. Well, it's not. And that's not all you can eat. You get 52 all you can eat in Miami. That's pretty nice.
America's pastime. Don't you love it? Don't you love it? Everything is good. And we talk about good fan treatment there with the good food. But then baseball always has to go back to its core, which is kind of fibbing, weird behavior, thinking they're getting stuff past us. You know, I'm just going to say it. I don't have to read all the names, but I'll remind people. Scott Hammond, he's now out of office. He's now working with the governor. Folks like Edgar Flores and Nicole Cannizzaro, you voted yes for the money for the A's. And I hope you're really schooling yourself on baseball here and this investment, because this could be up for vote in the fall. And you need to learn more about what you voted yes on. And here's a prime example, because people don't know what the hell is going on here. The A's sent down one of their starting outfielders.
The only good player they have right now? Who's playing well?
I think they're basically arguing that he's not good, which is a weird, weird thing to do.
Well, I don't think you can make that argument. I think the only argument you can make is if he's a problem. He's their best player.
Okay.
The only argument you can really make is that he's a problem in the clubhouse or locker room.
Tell people who it is.
Esteri Ruiz, who I think a lot of people were thinking could potentially try to break the major league record this year for stolen bases, especially if he's getting on
67 steals last year with the pizza box bases.
Yeah,
would have to get past Ricky at. Come on, numbers are everything in baseball.
105. I don't know.
130.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, That's why 67 to 130 is a big leap up.
It is.
But he did steal 67 a year ago.
And like a you know, a renewed commitment to try to get on base, which he started the year getting on base just about every time he came up to the plate.
The A's stink, but he's hitting 429 with an OPS of 1.232. I think that's pretty good.
pretty good. That would be a record, I think.
Do we have the starting lineup tonight against the Red Sox?
He's not in it.
What?
Well, he might be in the starting lineup for the Aviators.
Are we going to go see him?
I will. Sure.
He got sent down.
He did.
And, boy, the A's have really become a target for all baseball journalists around the country. But we should especially be watching them. Yeah, they sent down one of their outfielders who can actually play.
And by the way, who's fun? Their most fun player by far.
Yep. They're 1-4. They've committed 13 errors. That's 6 more than any other team. They've allowed 11 stolen bases. That's more than 2 more than any other team. I don't think they made
Guardians stole 6 in one game the other day.
A tremendous effort to field a competitive team. Are you doing what we all should have done last year?
What? Following them?
Bet against the A's.
Oh.
Every day?
No, I'm following them very closely.
Okay.
I have
started to run line against them every day. And doing it with Boston, because Boston ain't good either, is very dangerous. But yesterday was an easy win.
You also may get sick of a certain team talk on the show at some point. I and a bunch of friends went in on a very large season win total wager.
Oh, really?
Mostly so we can have like just a group text of every day of just making fun of this team. But we have Guardians season win total over. So
what was the number?
78.5. And so the start was against the A's, so I watched all of the Guardians games against the A's.
You're very much into it.
And I was all into it. Oh, really? We want the group text to just be able to trade Major League memes from the movie. And that's pretty much all we do every day, which is fun. But, yeah, I watched all of those games. And so, I was very much invested in the A's the first couple of days.
The A's GM, David Force, said, we talked to Asti a couple times during the spring, where he fits in the lineup, on this team, the importance of him playing every day, seeing through the first 4 games, that wasn't going to happen here.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Cutting down on strikeouts, getting on base are things that we've talked to him about last season.
What'd you say his OPS was?
He's hitting 429 with an OPS of 1.292.
So he's not doing that?
Bad signs, apparently. He did make some good adjustments this spring.
Yeah.
We saw an improvement in his exit velocity, some better at-bats. But reality is, to use his skills, he needs to get on base. He needs to be able to do that on a consistent basis. I'm hoping with him leading off every day in AAA, it's not a long stay for him down there.
What was his OPS?
1.292. Hitting 429.
They want him to do better? They want him to improve on that?
I don't know. Maybe a lot of fluke hits?
Okay. You'll take him at this point. You'll take fluke hits at this point.
I mean, he actually was a negative war player a year ago. It wasn't like -7. It was basically he was a break-even player.
Yeah.
Right? Wins above replacement.
Who has shown dramatic improvement over 4. Again, it's 4 games. But
I would also,
while I will say that it's a short sample size that, hey, we can't say he's much better just because he's had 4 really good games, how do they know?
Yeah.
It's not enough of a sample size for them either. Let's get on base. Well, how about if I get on, if I have an OPS of almost 1.3? Not good enough. Go work on it in AAA.
So what could be the purpose of this? What's the conspiracy theory here?
There is a theory out
there. I mean, they've got their money. They don't need to be terrible anymore.
There is a growing conspiracy theory that has taken off in the last couple of hours. Esther Ruiz is just the last in a line of players who has shown support for Last Dive Bar, which is essentially a nickname for the Oakland Coliseum. It's, hey, the Last Dive Bar. It's like, hey, you go hang out, have a couple beers, watch this team play. And they have sold a lot of merchandise that is about boycotting the owners, boycotting the team, keeping the team in Oakland. There is sell the team hoodies. There's boycott hoodies. There's a shirt depicting A's owner John Fisher as a playing with a puppet that resembles Dave Cavill. They host the yearly Fans Fest that is openly anti-ownership. And they sell wristbands to show that you are supportive of this organization.
How is he supporting this?
Well, he was wearing a wristband that was in support.
This year?
He was.
I mean, it sounds wild to me, but
he wasn't alone.
I don't really Oh, really? Other players did it too.
Brent Rooker did it.
So where are their spots?
Well, Brent Rooker did it. He's their leading home run hitter from last year. Really promising player. A little older, but some promise.
Sure.
He got benched.
Weird. Really?
Oh, Christian Pache. He was wearing one last year.
Still a lot of upside.
Traded.
Oh, no.
The list goes on and on.
Okay. This can't be real.
What other explanation? What was his on-base percentage again?
His OPS is 1.292. He's hitting .429.
And they'd like him to go improve that in AAA?
Be more consistent so we can have you in the lineup. That's not going to happen here.
Because he needs to do better than...
Yes.
Okay. Which one sounds more real, more plausible?
Well, yours sounds ridiculous, but the first one doesn't make any sense. Being sent down to improve. On an improve.
Is he supposed to have a better OPS than that in AAA? I mean, I know it's a hitter's ballpark.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So we were just talking about the A's and the oddity of sending down one of their best players. Now they're saying he's not one of their best players, which I think is a bizarre thing about baseball. They have, over the years, baseball has had no issue pounding its own players and then turning around months later. And I'm talking about arbitration and being like, hey, our product's great. Come out to the ballpark. Spend money on this guy. Well, you told me he wasn't that good. So Ruiz sent down to the Aviators. We'll see if he excels playing every day and what they're looking for from him. And the reason I brought all of this up is, you know, we pitched a lot of money. State of Nevada, Clark County pitched a lot of money at the A's. If you notice the other day, the A's are working on a 3 to 5 year extension on the lease at the Coliseum. 5 years. That's like 29, 20, 30.
There's an out after 2027 to give them the ability to come here. But it's essentially saying, hey, let's not get in this position again in 3 years. Where if it's not done and you need one more year, at least it's built into the contract.
I think it's also a cushion in case things really go south here.
Well, it's from – the proposal is from Oakland, though. It wasn't from the A's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oakland, City of Oakland proposed it.
Okay. All right. There is another stadium vote going down in the Midwest today.
There is.
Around the Chiefs.
It could be moving.
We'll track.
Very underreported story.
They sort of threatened – if the vote doesn't go the right way, well, we may have to look at certain things. So the Kansas City Chiefs could be on the move.
What city out there wants two-time defending champion Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes for the next few years?
At a cost of, what, $2 billion? $1.5 yeah. public money?
Yeah.
So I hope a city stands up and does the right thing. Because we know what will happen. They'll find other ways to pay for the stadium.
Of course.
Or they will go to the state next to them and go, embrace us and build us a stadium. And maybe Kansas says, okay, here's the money. But I would love to see the upheaval, and I would love for fans, even, well, in this case, of a freaking dynamite organization on the field, right? Winning. You can't feel better about the Chiefs than you do right now if you live in the state of Missouri. And it would be epic if those voters were like, well, you know what? Football is cool, and we love their success, but we shouldn't have to pay the freight for this.
But they probably won't.
Right,
they are in a different position, as you mentioned, that they can just go to the next state. It's a city that has two states. We're gonna say, how about if this side of the border pays, and then they take it away and take away that, tax revenue generating thing over to the other side of the border. So it's a little bit different than most places would be. But if they also would turn it down, I would love to see the Chiefs follow through on like, all right, we're gonna move then. Now let's see what happens.
Yep,
it'd be great.
And if you notice, Buffalo, total haul there for the Bills to get their stadium, was it $850 million or even more? Is it over a billion?
I feel like it's more. Well, between the state and the county.
Okay. And their PSL prices just came out.
Yeah.
Buffalonians? Buffaloites? What is it?
Buffalonians.
Buffalonians are going to pay PSLs. Really? Are you sure?
There's money.
Top end for
They're
Buffalo.
Not going to be happy.
$50,000 a seat. In Buffalo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're just giving you the picture here about what happens when the public says yes. And as I've seen many times on the internet, you've got basically corporate welfare that they then turn around and privatize their profit.
Yeah.
Because $550 million? Was that the final number? Or $500 million for the Raiders PSLs? When the estimate was about 250.
Yeah, that was closer to six something.
They made a ton on the PSLs.
Yeah.
So this is all this stadium stuff, this boondoggle, just keep it in mind. All right. Well, I have
PSLs
been.
PSLs in the Sydney Opera House are going to be.
I've been champing at the bit over this women's tournament, that game last night. Iowa-LSU.
Maybe the most disappointing sporting event I've ever seen.
I'm going to set this up. Adam pushing back against what everyone was saying. But I'm going to set this up, and I want you to think about it during the break. Was that game the result of a generational, unstoppable talent? Iowa beat LSU. A generational, unstoppable talent in Caitlin Clark, or absolute buffoonery on the sidelines, a terrible defensive game plan, and flooding her team with distractions outside the game by Kim Mulkey.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So Iowa beats LSU, and LSU just kind of faded as the game went along. Run after run after run, really couldn't get within hailing distance. And I'll just tell you, the argument put up by one Colin Cowherd, and I like to listen to Cowherd over on our sister station, Fox Sports Radio, Las Vegas. I don't think Colin's watching any women's basketball, so you got to come up with something. And his take's pretty interesting. Hey, Caitlin Clark is Steph Curry, right? Caitlin Clark is, he was even comparing her to Steve Jobs. Her court vision, she sees everything before it even happens. You can't trap her. She sees it. Just like Steve Jobs knew the iPhone, you know, ahead of everyone else is something that was going to be needed. Was last night the result of a generational unstoppable talent in Caitlin Clark? Don't give me your third option yet. Or Mulkey's buffoonery off the court, which was a lack of defensive preparation, because I don't care what anyone says. You have to try a box in one. You have to try trapping the ball when she gets it. Try something. Different wrinkles. 5-6. Haley Van Lith ain't covering Caitlin Clark running her through 53 picks. It was a terrible plan, and she put even more pressure on her players in dealing with just nonsense storylines that could have been dealt with after you win a championship or go to the finals with all the media stuff. None of that was necessary to do to her players. She better have apologized to that team in the locker room, because that is a low point in coaching on so many fronts, on the court and off.
No, I despise Kim Mulkey. I think everybody knows that, so I'd love to completely blame it on her. They did dominate the first 14 minutes of the game, right?
They didn't dominate on the scoreboard.
No, they did. They were up the whole time. I don't think they trailed the first 14 minutes, did they?
They fell down 17-9.
Well, then LSU came back and they were fired back
by throwing the ball inside a bunch and scoring near the hoop. And then their offensive game plan changed.
Of course it did.
Then all of a sudden we're shooting the most inefficient shot in all of basketball, which is the 13 to 17 foot mid-range jumper. It's a waste of freaking time.
Yeah, it did seem like something dramatically changed in the game after 14 minutes. Obviously. So that to me is, in the game, I thought that they did have an option. I don't think they adjusted. After obviously their best player got hurt, stayed in the game, didn't have an option, didn't know what to do. And so that lack of adjustment, a problem. Also, they thought Haley Van Lith could stay with Caitlin Clark, and she did. And she was in her face on all those shots early in the game, and she made them. And she just wasn't tall enough to impact it, and they didn't think any of their taller players were going to be able to stay with her, and they didn't adjust on that level either. And they finally tried to in the third quarter. Didn't really work. And by that point, I thought, Caitlin Clark was in a pretty good rhythm where, she was going to make shots and step back and shoot. And like, all right, if you want to shoot from 30 feet, go ahead. And she made some.
But you can't do that.
That sucks.
Do you see the number they flashed? Past 27 feet, she's like a 56% shooter from three. So she's at 30. Because that happened. There was a switch where Reese got switched on her, and she was like 30 feet away. And she made it over Reese, and Reese kind of put her head down, was like, well, what can you do? Like, don't let her get the ball in the first place. Freaking trap.
Yeah, they were trying to deny ball at points, and then I thought that they got mentally defeated. Mm-hmm.
Coaching.
I agree, but I will say, and you said, I did have the third option, and I will say, like, I think, and I backed this up with some people I was sitting with who are still mad at me. So I was sitting with some Iowa fans, and when Angel Reese got hurt, I made a very, very large bet on Iowa. And they said, oh, she's not even hurt. What are you going to make an excuse? I'm like, I'm backing it up with money. I'm backing up with a lot of money. You're seeing me do this right now.
Yeah.
Angel Reese, after her injury, after they were winning the game and completely in control, I thought, and I was like, oh, man, they're going to win this game. She gets hurt. She was 6 of 8 when she got hurt. She finished 1 of 13 after that. And then they said, that didn't impact it at all. What?
It did.
Of course it
did. She had no lift.
It was the game.
And honestly, you could tell she was really trying to bust it on offense. And then after misses, she was kind of lagging up the court. She couldn't play deep. She basically picked one end or the other.
And she couldn't play offense either, because when she would try to do a shot that she would usually do, she couldn't lift at all. And she went into the lane for one.
They have so many weapons.
They
throughout the year.
But they let the fact that Angel Reese couldn't move impact everyone else on the floor. And
it probably did break them mentally.
Yeah, if they want to say, hey, the coach needs to get them together and say, hey, it's fine. Okay, but we just watched a girl go for the first like 12, 13 minutes of the game, dominating them on both ends of the floor, blocking shots, getting every rebound. And now all of a sudden she's not going to be effective. Like, it is going to deflate your team. And it is hard to rally them. And look, my friends were saying after the game, oh, it's just an excuse. At the time, what did I say and what did I do to back up this opinion that's just an excuse? Made a large wager on it. It proved to be right.
I thought what she did off the court was an all-time selfish move. I thought all the nonsense around the team, because of her. She didn't have to mention the Washington Post story. She didn't have to go off on the LA Times.
Well, I thought the LA Times she did, because it was in the locker room. The players were saying it got to them. They had read it. They shouldn't have. And I thought that she did have to go to bat for them. Again, I hate defending Kim Mulkey. In that case, I thought she did. The other one was selfish. The first one is selfish. That was about her, and it actually wasn't even that bad if you read it. It just said her family hates her because she's awful. Okay, yeah, I think we all knew that.
It's a story that's been told many times about coaches. I think the shocking thing for a lot of people is that it was about a female.
Sure.
And that hasn't been done. But what have I said for now 30 years around Sports Talk Radio? That you wish for coverage, you're going to get coverage. And it's going to be both ways. And sometimes it is going to be criticism that you've never faced. And she doesn't get criticized in Baton Rouge or Louisiana, and barely in women's college basketball, and she certainly wasn't in Waco. She's not used to it. So she gets all fired up, and her players get rolled into it. It was incredibly selfish. There's already enough pressure. They've already embraced the villain role. And then when they have some stories written about her and the program that they are villains, they freaked out. A lot of it reminded me of, like, you rise to the top when you're the bully and you embrace being the villain. And as soon as someone steps up and punches you in the grill, and then fans are like, yeah, screw you. It reminded me a lot of Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey was done when she wasn't the bully. She was done. And she's talked about it since, that she could not handle all the criticism. But you could handle the money and the glory when you were the bully. Bullies don't like to get pushed. Which, the most disappointing thing for me in this whole deal, I think Caitlin Clark against South Carolina is going to be awesome. But I wanted South Carolina to face LSU again, because South Carolina doesn't give a rat's ass about LSU, and they step right over them and through them. They punch the bully right in the freaking face, and you saw what happened last time. LSU tried to step up and get tough, and then Angel Reese ran off the floor as Flaje Johnson was knocked on her rear end by a big for South Carolina. And after the game, Dawn Staley was not really apologetic, and it's like, hey, sorry, bully. Bigger one than you. Tougher than you. More mental fortitude than you.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let's bring in Steve Kim. Steve Kim, 323 up on Twitter. Host of the 3 Knockdown Rule. His spot is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. Steve, what's going on, buddy?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Really good. A lot of good boxing to recap. And then I saw you and Whitlock going over some good issues with some good angles on them. First of all, man, I sat down with Raleigh Romero at Radio Row, and he kind of came off as a really arrogant kid. And man, oh man, did boxing fans turn on him when he lost and kind of fought in arrogant style and had an arrogant lead up to this whole thing, huh?
Well, he's just not very good. I mean, he's much more of a character and a personality than he is a prize fighter, and I get it. He's trying to play the role of the heel. Maybe there's some shtick involved, but, you know, we're kind of seeing that when you play the villain role, like maybe Angel Reese did, no one's going to feel sorry for you when you get your comeuppance. And I've never really been a fan of his. I think he lacked a lot of credibility, And look, he was made to turn down a much more lucrative deal to fight Ryan Garcia on April 20th to take on Pit Bull. And what happened on Saturday, quite frankly, Steve, didn't really surprise me. I've never really thought he was truly a world-class prize fighter.
Yep, and arrogant in matchmaking, because I saw you point out, bruh, how about just fight Ryan Garcia and at least make big money?
Well, that's an old adage in boxing. If you're going to lose, and if there's two fights where you're the underdog, and again, the variable is how much of a beating you're going to take or how much damage it's going to do to you, and so you can kind of debate that, but you always try to go for the most amount of money in situations like that. But as he tried to say, his goal was to be an Amazon superstar, and I guess that's not going to happen now.
Ugly, real ugly. Are we cool with Garcia sending him messages and then Oscar De La Hoya with Bernard Hopkins putting out videos laughing at him?
Well, as Oscar De La Hoya would say, Rollies, because he always calls them Rollies,
Yeah. Has
said a lot of disparaging things about De La Hoya. And again, the energy you put out will oftentimes be the energy that you get back.
Oh.
So that it is karma, and maybe it's payback. Look, if he was a rather quiet, nondescript guy who just said all the respectful cliches, I don't think Oscar or Bernard would ever say a thing. I think they'd be disappointed that he didn't take the fight, maybe questioning the decision, but they would never have as much fun as they did on Saturday night when they made that video. But also, Leonard Ellerbe has a way of chirping a lot at Oscar, always getting into other people's business, trying to be so judgmental. And now he's upset that they made the video when there's evidence themselves. You could see all the tweets. Leonard Ellerbe's not above taking shots at fighters who lose that aren't under his promotional umbrella. So right. I just find that to be a lot of hypocrisy.
Steve Kim's with us. The energy you put out is the energy you get back. I don't know how much you paid attention to yesterday with LSU going down. It feels to me like they put some energy out there and they got it back last night, and now they're shocked by it and they're sad. And hey, if you want to act like the bully, people are going to be really happy when you go down.
Yeah, I mean, look, Angel Reese is now, after being the villain, is now trying to lean on this victimhood. And look, I'm not saying that death threats and stuff of that nature, racial insults, should be tolerated. I was absolutely flabbergasted when she said she's been sexualized. Steve, no one sexualized her more than herself, if you go on her social media. So I found that to be a little bit, not disturbing, but I thought, again, another case of hypocrisy. And I don't think the mainstream media has the guts or the wherewithal to question her about that particular point. But Caitlin Clark certainly stepped up, had a great game. Can't lie, I didn't watch it. I think Jason Whitlock probably had a watch party during yesterday. In fact, he might even fly down for the Final Four, knowing him. But, you know, again, if this was a team that didn't say much, didn't cast themselves in the roles of the black hat, much like some of the other teams of the past, there wouldn't be all this heat about it. But when you do things like, and you never stand out for the national anthem, which I guess is the habit of LSU, there's going to be a good segment of America that's going to rally against you. That is the reality.
Interesting that you said the mainstream media doesn't have the guts. Can I tell you, when the LA Times makes a columnist apologize, it hurts the coverage of women's sports. This is something I've talked about for years. You either want the coverage, which is going to be the same coverage you get with the men's side. I mean, you saw the one guy I retweeted who basically said, I've never seen a big debate about sportsmanship on the men's side as opposed to this LSU women's team. And I was like, I mean, I could have gone on for hours last night tweeting stuff from the 80s and since and current situations. It's the backbone of sports talk radio, sportsmanship and good versus evil.
Wow, Cofield. Whoa, Cofield. But I'm just saying, you're right, and I believe that was Dave Zirin,
yes,
who makes a living on making proclamations like that, and you know, he leans a certain way. He's so woke, he probably never goes to sleep. But you're right. As someone that is a diehard Miami Hurricane fan, I get it. And if they ever lost a game in that era, the last thing they would do is cry.
Right.
There's no room for it. You kind of set yourself up. Look, UNLV in the early 90s or late 80s, yes, early 90s, especially with the teams with Larry Johnson, you either hated them or loved them.
Yep.
Okay, personally, I was a fan growing up in L.A., watching a lot of their games on KHJ Channel 9, where Chick Hearn and Ross Porter were the announcers for a lot of their home games that would be televised out here in L.A. And I remember there was a certain segment of the population, for whatever reason, when they lost to Duke in 91, they thought it was the greatest thing. Now, yep. For me, it was heartbreaking. I still cannot watch a single minute of that game, but that comes with the territory. Nobody gets to cry in those situations.
That is one of the legendary good versus evil battles in the history of sports. And here's the thing. We've come to learn, those of us who are smart, that the evil was Duke. And Duke is one of the ultimate evils based on sportsmanship. There is a new iteration of Christian Laettner at least every 5 years on the Duke roster who plays like a horse's ass, who is arrogant, but also a bad sport.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun of it, though.
Yes.
That is part of the fun
of it. Be cocky. Be cocky. But here's the thing. When you're a bully, you got to be able to take the punches when you're down. You can't hold up some shield and say, oh, it's the whatever, sexist, it's racist. You don't get to use the shield then.
Let's be honest. If LSU would have somehow beaten Iowa, who is now America's team, move over, Cowboys, do you think that Angel Reese would have been humble in victory? Can we just be honest about this?
No.
She probably would. She would have been unapologetically, to use her own words, herself, which is fine.
Do it.
But here's the problem. You put yourself on a tightrope when you act like this.
Man, I could go on and on. Catholic versus convicts. I mean, one of the great examples of all time of grading sportsmanship and then labeling. I mean, I won't even get into that one. I'm not sure who the convict should have been in that rivalry. Tim Tszyu. He got caught. He got a cut. So let's talk about it. Because he's a high-level fighter. He's not Riley Romero.
In any way, he's not. He's diametrically opposed to him in every way. You know, the great debate, and again, he fought very gallantly with the crimson mask. It looked like the end of that movie, Carrie, how bloody it was on both ends. But I canvassed the opinion of a few fighters, well-known fighters, and I said, hey, guys, if it were up to you, would you have stopped that fight if you were in that position? He said, yes. Because there's no doubt, I thought the first two rounds he had tactical and technical control of the fight. And as soon as his vision became impaired, Fundura started to really lace that jab, and the vision was impaired. But look, give Fundura credit. You still have to go out there and beat a guy and win the fight and grasp that opportunity. He did that. But look, boxing is a business, and there are a lot of people in the business of boxing that are questioning the business acumen of Tim Tszyu's corners and handlers. And I know Jacob Stitch Duran has also put out a few videos on social media, and I'll defer to him given his background. It's almost impossible to stop a cut from where it was with Tim Tszyu. So you could have done anything short of putting super glue and spackle on there, and the blood would have been an issue. So it's a tough situation. I still have great respect and admiration for Tim Tszyu and his skills and his fighting spirit. But unfortunately, sometimes doing the right thing can lead to the wrong thing happening.
Should Tszyu have taken this fight? I mean, he was preparing for somebody totally different and then changes it up. I mean, that's the kind of thing you do have to think about at this level.
That's another very legitimate question. This is where I do second guess. And again, hindsight's 20/20, and unfortunately Tim Tszyu's vision on that night and starting from round three wasn't. But I just want to make this point. As someone who's not generally advocating for rematch clauses, because I think they muddle up the scene and they hold up traffic, in a situation like that, when you're facing such a different style of opponent, from the 5'8 Thurman, who's a right-hander, to a 6'6 southpaw, if there's ever a time I would have said, okay, get a rematch clause just in case, where it was, and I think one was warranted, it would have been in that particular situation. Unfortunately, they didn't do that. I think that's where they really failed their fighter. And now it looks like Fundura may be fighting someone else besides Tim Tszyu. And I think Tim Tszyu's got some time to heal that cut. And Fundura came out of that fight banged up. And now Terrence Crawford, talk about the best laid plans of mice and men, he's going to have to find a new opponent because I think that they were going after Tim Tszyu. But again, Saturday night happened.
Steve Kim is with us. Last couple of points here. Interesting one from your guy Whitlock. Should Andy Enfield be on that list of coach killing LeBron?
You know, I haven't really paid attention to it because generally guys who score less than 5 points a game, do they really have the power to get rid of coaches? I mean, is the LeBron impact that great? I don't know. But it certainly doesn't look good for anyone involved, although the Andy Enfield reign was kind of nondescript. I have a feeling this was more about the years and not just this particular season that got him displaced at USC.
Very limited time, about a minute left. I watched you and Whitlock talk about the Utah women's coach in Idaho. It sounded like you guys didn't believe the full version of the story, that there might be an ulterior motive.
I never do. I look, Jason's the one who's really doubtful of the whole thing. But again, there's so many situations like that BYU volleyball situation. It turns out there's nothing. And also this whole Me Too movement, which I think is kind of a byproduct of today's society. I don't believe all women. What I believe is evidence. Evidence that can be proven and shown. And I look, just color me skeptical when situations like this are talked about and brandied about. Let's just put it that way.
Last 20 seconds, what are you guys going to bounce around for topics on Three Knockdown Rule?
Well, we had Doug Fisher, editor of Ring Magazine. We're doing an evergreen show that we taped about a week and a half ago because Mario's in Chicago filming a Christmas movie. So we talk about everything in the sport of boxing and just general topics.
Steve, you're the best. We'll talk to you.
Thanks.
Adam, for you, and we'll have to build on this one. If Nike comes to you as a Nike school and says, hey, we got Bronny and LeBron for you, you want them? Do you think every school says yes?
Yeah.